Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey friends, welcome to the Tennis and Bagels podcast. Today is just me and Owen. Our good friend Vansh is actually working at the US Open right now. He's not at New York, but he's doing some work from home remotely. And it's a dream come true for Vansh. So congrats, Vansh. I know it's something that you've worked really hard on. And it's sad that you cannot be here right now, but you're making some good money working with tennis. So the dream. Well, we're going to be enjoying the US Open. Hopefully you can do some of that in your work time as well. So it's just me and Owen, great as well. Owen has spent some time away, so it's good that we can do some more content with him before the end of the year as well. So without further ado, let's just jump right on. Or just, how are you doing, Owen?
I'm good, thanks. I'm glad we're doing this. And very happy for Vansh. He's going to do great work. And that now makes two out of the three of us that have gotten tennis jobs, right?
It's just
one missing. Do you know who that is?
It's probably one of our guests. No, I'm just kidding. You're going to get one soon.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm not holding my breath, but thank you. No, I'm kidding. Excited to break this down. I think I don't think either the men or the women have an obvious favorite for the US Open here. So it'll be fun to kind of get into it and give some predictions.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can start right off with the men's just because it's probably the easiest, the most, the one that has the least secrecy in who the favorites are.
Yeah.
And we're obviously looking at Djokovic and Alcaraz. We have Djokovic coming back for the first time in the US since 2020. When he had
2021, I think.
2021. Yeah, true. That he played the Medvedev in the finals. Excited to see that again, how he's gonna manage Arthur Ashe. He's no rookie when it comes to that crowd. So and we know the rowdiest ones when Roger Federer played him in those two times, 10 and 11, that was quite ridiculous. So it's not something that we're expecting. It's going to rattle him too much, but who knows? Maybe 24 is going to be on the line and something's going to happen. And the obvious other guy, Carlos Alcaraz, who honestly surprised me very much in Cincinnati. I thought he was just going to be dead. I thought it was going to be 3-4 for Djokovic in that final. To even think that he had a match point and made that an almost 4-hour contest is beyond my imagination. This is every time that I'm trying to playing down Alcaraz's expectations, he just pulls it right back up. Because I'm okay, no, this guy has something special. It's I'm just thinking there's no way. Alcaraz on hardcore, Djokovic is going to smoke him. He's a lot fresher. Alcaraz is a lot more tired, maybe emotionally even because of the Wimbledon win. He's just trying to get on his feet for the US Open and whatever. He almost wins the thing. It was unreal. I couldn't even believe that. And right now, I can't, even though the US Open is longer, is best of five, no Djokovic, all that dynamic, he cannot really afford to go 20 hours on court before facing Djokovic, unless Djokovic kind of spends the same amount of time, then he's kind of have a shot in that regard. But it's definitely different, a landscape. But still, I don't have much of a doubt that Alcaraz can do that again. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone says that these two are the obvious favorites. I kind of want to take it one step further and say, I have a really, really hard time saying that anyone else could even, disrupt that final. I mean, and I have an even harder time, picturing someone besides those two eventually lifting the trophy. Because we talk about other contenders, feel like the obvious ones are Medvedev and Sinner, right? Yeah. Medvedev can't beat Alcaraz, and Sinner isn't going to beat Djokovic. So even if Sinner somehow takes out Alcaraz, I think they would meet in the quarters. He's not beating Djokovic in a final. And if Medvedev somehow takes out Djokovic, he's not beating Alcaraz. I think Alcaraz just destroyed him at Wimbledon, and that felt really conclusive. So I think for either of them to win, they would need to beat, you know, one of them, who they'd already be an underdog against, and then they would need the other one to lose before they face them. And those two things in conjunction seem really, really unlikely. So I have no issues saying Djokovic and Alcaraz are 1A, 1B, or 1B, 1A, yeah, however you want to order it, and everyone else is like three or four levels below that.
Yeah, I think just looking at the draw, Alcaraz, Medvedev, and Sinner are in the same half of the draw, which is a blowout of a draw. Like, the draw is like packed with just big names. Like, Djokovic's half is a lot like simpler in general. But the only other thing that I can't see happening here is like Medvedev, Sinner taking out Alcaraz in the quarters, and Medvedev takes out Sinner in the semis, and then Medvedev has a chance against Djokovic, even though he's still like a pretty underdoggy, like, especially the way Alcaraz has been playing. The way Djokovic seems to be a lot more motivated, and the shirt rip honestly doesn't lie. He wants to win. So yeah, I feel like, yeah, it's just really hard. And honestly, like, I'm just going to go off the bat. Like, I think my favorite is Djokovic still. I think best of five, nobody has more experience. Nobody has more clutchness, I would say. Just Djokovic, I feel like he just has the edge still. But again, as I said, Alcaraz keeps like elevating like his game all the time. So I give the edge to Djokovic. I don't think he's like a heavy, heavy favorite. He's always been like over the years, over the past like maybe like 3 or 4 years.
Well, it's funny, like, I don't know if he's ever really been like a heavy, heavy favorite at the US Open, because like his track record is kind of bad there.
But to be fair, it's his own fault. It's not like,
well, it is. But like, and it's weird to say about someone who's like a three-time titleist at the US Open, but he has more weird losses there than he has at the French Open. You can go through and like count through the years. Like, so first of all, like his first title, 2011, he shouldn't even have won because Federer was up two sets on him in the semis and then had the two match points. So like, you know, he pulled that out. It was amazing, but he was very close to not winning that title. 2015, that was his absolute peak. Federer still pushed him pretty hard in the final, four sets, could easily have been five. And then 2018, that was probably his most comfortable title. He was in trouble in like his first two matches, like round one and round two. He, I think one of them against Fuzovic, they split the first two sets, and then he almost went down like a double break in the third. So anyway, my long-winded point is Djokovic and the US Open do not mix that well. He lost to Nishikori there in 2014 in the semis. He, 2016 final, I think he had an elbow issue, but he was up a set on Wawrinka and he lost that. He's lost, he's a 1-2 against Nadal there. And, Nadal is great, obviously, but like that rivalry on hard court traditionally really favors Djokovic. So that's not great. What else? I mean, 2021, like, yeah, he made the final, but he needed to get through that draw more easily than he did, because when by the time he got to the final, he had nothing left and Medvedev kind of starched him. So I think like my one issue with calling Djokovic the favorite is just like it feels like something's going to go wrong for him at the US Open, because that always happens.
It's honestly just kind of like, you look at the draw, like especially 2020, when I think about it, it's like, okay, now what sort of black magic is going to happen that Djokovic isn't going to win again? Like it's as you said, like it's almost like freak accidents or just like Djokovic like having weird losses, maybe because of the end of the season. He's also a bit cooked. Maybe he's a little bit fresher this year. He's sort of like managing his schedule even more like glaringly around the Grand Slam. So I think he would want to be as fresh as possible. And I don't know if he's going to, and his draw is like really favorable to him. Like, honestly, I don't even see. I mean, who knows? Maybe Felix Auger-Aliassime could come out of the gates like being extremely like strong and like pushing him to five sets, like he did with Nadal at Roland Garros. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's gonna play like some of the best matches of his season and do it. Like, you never really know like which Auger-Aliassime is gonna show up these days. Aside from that, like, I don't see Tsitsipas doing much. I don't see Fritz doing much. Rune could do something, but he would need like an awakening, essentially. So.
Right. He's not developed enough to win.
Yeah.
Someone's going to take a set. That's the only thing I say with confidence, because someone always takes a set.
Yeah.
But besides injury, like, nothing's going to stop him from getting to the final.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't even know. Like, I think Alcaraz is definitely like the trickiest path, but being fresh, being 20 years old, he hasn't been injured this year aside from the Australian Open, right? So,
yeah, I don't think so. Maybe there was like a minor thing at some point, but yeah. I think with him, the only tripwire is if he runs into Sinner, and if he just, and if he isn't at his best, then Sinner could beat him. But that, like, I don't know. I think he'd beat Sinner more comfortably than he did last year if they play again. And, you know, Sinner is not, like, intimidated by that matchup. He always plays really, really well against Carlos. But kind of like we were saying before, I don't think that's going to translate into, like, title-winning form. Like, he's not... If he beats Alcaraz, he's not going to sustain that for the semis and the final, and he's certainly not going to beat Djokovic, I don't think. I think... I guess if I had to say, I'd say Djokovic is the slight favorite, because I feel like Djokovic could only lose to Alcaraz, but Alcaraz could lose to, I guess, Sinner or Djokovic. And then there's also that thing where no one's defended the US Open on the ATP since 2008. So Alcaraz has that to contend with. No one wins two US Opens in a row on the ATP.
Yeah. I think the one thing about the men's draw, now that I'm just looking at it, like, just quickly on their Instagram page, and I see a Party Pooper in it, and I think Alexander Zverev could make something out of his draw. Honestly, I think he can beat Sinner. I don't think he can beat Alcaraz, but I think he believes he can, so I think that's if this happened, imagine we couldn't have like a Zverev Medvedev semifinal.
That would be a nightmare.
I
could see him beating Sinner, but I don't think he's going to beat Alcaraz. I think he could lose to someone else too.
True. I think so too, but like, I think that out of everybody aside from Djokovic and Alcaraz, I think he probably has the biggest belief in himself, even if it's like the least justified of all the three. But he did push Djokovic to almost three sets in Cincinnati, so it was probably Djokovic's toughest match before Alcaraz. So that's why I'm thinking, like, maybe Alcaraz, I mean, Zverev has something to give right there. But yeah, honestly, and I'm gonna also be very, like, open in terms of being a fan, that I really just want to see Alcaraz Djokovic again, because I don't even know how many more contests like these we're gonna have. And after Cincinnati and Wimbledon, like, come on, just give us another one.
It was amazing. I mean, this rivalry is like, when was the last time a rivalry was this good this quickly? Like, all of their matches have been good. Even the French Open, which was like the most disappointing one, it was I think everything we hoped it would be for the first two sets. And I think their two matches since then have more than made up for the disappointment of the last two sets of that match. I mean, Cincinnati was ridiculous. Like, those match point saves, like, the one everyone talks about is like Alcaraz like digging out that volley, but like, I think in the next game he hit like a 98 mile an hour forehand winner down the line to save a championship point. Like, that's the one that sticks with me the most. That was ridiculous. And I think besides kind of early popcorn matches or like the good story of the tournament, like, we'll have a lucky loser go to round four or something. Like, I think the eventual Djokovic Alcaraz final is like, that's like the only big story on the men's side, I think. Like, I don't think any other contenders are ready to disrupt that. I don't think they're like, you know, no one's like, oh, we need to see Medvedev Sinner, you know, like, it's not like there's a, it's like a big two right now. So bring on that final.
Yeah. And if we're just like talking like small storylines, I think Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka have, like, Stan Wawrinka less maybe, but, well, I guess them both sort of like have the same chance of like making it like too far into this tournament. But Andy Murray has kind of a decent chance to like making at least the third round. I can see it.
Okay.
And so does Wawrinka.
Yeah, man, this is going to be like, if the Murray Musings friends are listening to this, I apologize. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in Murray to make a run. I think he's just past it. Like he's still at the point where he can play really well for one match, I think. But even betting that he'll make it past the second round, I think is dangerous. I mean, I guess people are gonna say, like, look at what he did at the Australian Open. And yeah, that was amazing. I was at both of his first two matches. It was one of the best tennis experiences of my life. But he got through both of those matches by the skin of his teeth. He's got a metal hip for whatever reason, and I don't necessarily blame him for this. He can't play in the aggressive way that he needs to really get big wins at this point in his career. So I think he's going to go out early just because that is what tends to happen to him now.
I mean, he possibly getting Dimitrov in the second round, so
Yeah, that's winnable. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
that's the thing. Like, I mean, it again depends on like which Murray, which Dimitrov shows up.
Yes.
You can't really, even Murray nowadays, you cannot even bet on him to like lose on physicality because for some reason he can still play epics. Like in he can do this
Yeah.
for like two matches in a row, not three, but like two matches that he could pull it off. So I could see him like getting to the third round. And that's when he probably meets Zverev, and that's gonna frustrate the hell out of him. But yeah. And
Yeah, I guess what I'm worried about is that like he plays his epic in the first round and then he has nothing left for Dimitrov because he can't beat anyone comfortably. That's the other thing. Like
Yeah, that's the problem.
so.
And as I've, in terms of like just speaking a little bit of Murray, just going on a tangent, I've been watching because, as you know, I work for a tennis company, and sometimes I do get to watch like a few, get like access to like other matches, like in building content and whatnot, and just like checking out like some Murray matches. And like, I saw a few when he won against Djokovic in Montreal or Toronto. For maybe his third title, I think 20, I want to say 15, but I'm not sure. Maybe 16. There isn't a lot of that changed. I think he's a little bit slower nowadays. He's more erratic, but the essence is the same. Like he hasn't really changed much in his game, like ever. Like he did the most aggressive I've ever seen him play was probably US Open 2012 when he was just like letting it rip with his forehand. But apart from that, like he's basically always the same. So maybe he himself like cannot really believe like why is my game that has always worked isn't anymore. Like something is like just hardwired in him to not really change it. But who knows? Yeah, maybe you're just right. Maybe he's just kind of past his prime and he's gonna announce retirement like maybe next year. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I think you're spot on with that actually. Like, did you see Star Wars Force Awakens? You remember when Kylo Ren is like, I know what I have to do, I just don't know if I have the strength to do it or something. I feel like that's his thing. Like he knows how he should be playing, but it's like the years of instinct of like playing the same way. It he like can't override that almost, you know? It's like he's a computer and it's running on like some code and now he needs to like update it, but like the code that's like baked into the computer isn't like letting him do that. So like I think he genuinely wants to be more aggressive, but I think it's like, yeah, I don't, I think it's just like his body's not letting him, or like his mind isn't letting him something, but for whatever reason he's not doing it.
But yeah, it's like I'll just say basically that Alcaraz and Djokovic are still the favorites. I really don't see them losing the edge at any time during this tournament. Like what do you think would take for them? Do you think any one of them is not going to reach the final, and who is it?
Djokovic, I'd bet on making the final. So Djokovic, the thing that can stop him is like an injury. Alcaraz, Sinner could beat him. That's it.
Wow, that's just how
Or
strong
an
they are
injury for him
lately.
too, I guess, but
You know what's crazy? Like I just read at the ATP, Djokovic just needs to win his first round match to become number one again. So,
I saw that, yeah.
and it's like that's insane because like obviously like there's the Grand Slam race and whatnot, and Alcaraz right now is probably not focusing on number one because it's so out of his control that it doesn't matter at this point. But then after the US Open, I think that's like we're gonna have like such a huge battle. And I think it's gonna make the season super interesting. So I think we're gonna have to tune in like right after the US Open just to like lay down the race. And so I'm actually looking at it and the ATP doesn't have it yet. I think they just start putting it like after the US Open, like on the website. right now I have to go to the NATO ATP website, which I don't do. So yeah.
Right. But yeah, it should be interesting because Djokovic is defending. He had like a Paris final and he won the ATP finals last year. Yeah. So he's got more points. So yeah, I could see him getting it back at the US Open and then Alcaraz getting it back again. Should be fun.
Yeah, and interestingly for Alcaraz as well, like he probably wants to make sure he defends all the 2,000 points that he has because he is historically hasn't really been at his best in the indoor season, like post US Open. Historically, he has like two seasons under his belt, but still.
Yeah.
So it's just really going to be interesting. Like, I think if we're lucky, we're going to have like another big final at the ATP finals this year. And that one's going to decide number one. I think it's always the greatest when this happens. Like if it's decided before, it's fine. But if it's like a big battle, like 2016 Djokovic Murray, that's when it's at. I think that's the coolest thing that could happen at the ATP. And my gosh, they would market the crap out of it. So
yeah.
Should
we move on to the women?
Absolutely. I was about to suggest that. So on the women's side, we have the other youngster, number one, who defied all odds and just took the world by surprise in 2022. Iga Świątek, defending champion. Much less of a favorite, though.
Yeah. I think where we have two favorites on the men's side, I think we have like three or four or five on the women's side. Like for me, it's five who I think can have a realistic chance at the title. I think you have Świątek, Sabalenka, Rybakina, Jabeur, and Goff. All of them have made major finals. Three of them are already major champions. Jabeur made her major final. She made one like at the last major, and she's a finalist at the US Open. Goff is also a major finalist, and she's just beaten Świątek for the first time. And so I feel like that is an indication that she, like, in theory, can now, like, beat pretty much anyone. Because Świątek was that matchup where she was just not getting anything done. So I kind of think it's between those five. And then, you know, you have your group of dark horses like Pegula, like Kvitova, like the kind of that, like, second tier. Do you want to go through the five? And then anyone else who you think could have a shot at the title as well?
Yeah, for sure. We can start with Świątek since she's number one and she's defending champion. There's a lot of riding on her. And the one thing that worries me most about her was as she was speaking about like just fatigue in general. Not sure how much of this physical. I think it's mostly just psychological and emotional. She did lose two tough matches in Montreal and Cincinnati. It was a semis. I think the one she lost in Montreal, and I don't remember.
Pegula, and semis to Goff.
So those are big losses that she suffered. Not sure how much that's gonna weigh on her. It could either do weighing on her, or it could motivate her to win more. But yeah, she also was mentioning this. So who knows what's gonna happen? And Goff is in her quarter, so that's gonna be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and look, like, if she were to play Goff again, like, would I still favor Świątek? Like, absolutely, because, you know, she still leads that matchup, I think, like, 5-1 or 6-1. She is the defending champion. Like, I think it remains to be seen if Goff's forehand can sustain the level it was at in that Cincinnati match.
Yeah.
But, you know, that Cincinnati match shows that, like, that's not an automatic win for Świątek anymore. She could lose that. She's going to have to play well. These matches that she's lost at Cincinnati and Canada, like, both of them 6-4 in the third. That's those are usually matches we associate with, like, her wins, you know?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness.
If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And, last year, U.S. Open semis, that match with Sabalenka, that was 6-4 in the third. And I think that her year, I mean, the aura of invincibility has come off, right? Like, she is still number one. She won a major this year. It's been a successful year in many respects, but people are starting to beat her, you know? Like, yeah. multiple rivals. So I don't think she's the favorite overall. And I think there are a handful of players who could all take her out.
The one silver lining, I think, in her losses this year is there has been quite a few more that were in three sets and that were like pretty hard fought ones. So she's kind of getting a hang of like winning three sets and navigating that and just fighting, just like trying to find like another gear. So I think it's going to be interesting, like how this like is going to define her clutchness. Cause I think she's getting there. I don't think like she's too far off. But she doesn't need to like win comprehensively anymore. Like she can maybe drop a set and still be able to like fight and get back into it. So yeah, I think it's very hard to like bet against her like anywhere at this point, maybe Wimbledon obviously, but on hard court she already won this tournament, so you can't just say like, oh yeah, Świątek's definitely not gonna do it. So I think that it could play in her favor that like she already has those matches, she has now had quite a few experiences of like tough matches. Mm-hmm. So you could toughen up for her like and just be a very good survival, just kick in the survival instinct against the players that are able to push her. And for Goff, like it's always interesting when players play at home, so like it's interesting That's to true. See like what's gonna be the effect of like this newfound Goff, Coco Gauff, who is now not now like in the league of the favorites to win Grand Slams at home on Arthur Ashe. Obviously, she's made her first Grand Slam final last year, so she's kind of already has this experience of being a Grand Slam finalist. But now she's arguably a lot better than she was last year. So I would say like maybe she has a lot of expectations. Maybe America has a lot of expectations. Maybe Ashe is going to be loud. So it's can either push her or, you know, just get in her head. So
we'll see. And I think something, you know, I didn't mention about Świątek is like, she's still arguably like the most consistent player on tour, right? Yeah. Even if maybe some players on a hard court or a grass court have like a higher peak. So right now anyway. So I think like, and I absolutely do think Goff is a contender. Cincinnati was amazing. I was also impressed that she like followed up that Świątek win by winning the final over Muchova. Like that's hard to do. I thought she was going to lose the final because of the, you know, you get a huge win like that.
Yeah.
And there's like a physical and emotional like come down after that.
Yeah.
And she like sustained that level. That was amazing. But you know, it's one tournament. So it's like you said, there's going to be pressure. I think like as good as that forehand was, like it's still a weakness, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think sustaining that at a high level is going to be a challenge. So I wouldn't be surprised if it faltered again because, you know, improving a shot that's a weakness is like a long process usually. But yeah, again, like I wouldn't be surprised if she won. Yeah. I think we kind of have an interesting situation with like the five contenders I named, because you also have all these like style matchups. Like I think like Jabeur tends to really struggle against Świątek, and Świątek has struggled against Sabalenka and Rybakina. And you kind of have, and like Goff usually struggles against Świątek, but now it seems like Świątek might struggle with Goff. And you have kind of all these permutations and all these different matchups. And so I feel like the matchups that we get are going to really heavily influence the outcome of the tournament. You know, like,
yeah.
I think there are some among the five who like Świątek would not mind playing at all. But if she plays a good version of Rybakina, like, I don't think she's going to win. Whether we get a good version of Rybakina is another question, because I think she hasn't been the same since she pulled out of the French Open. So it's interesting.
I think Rybakina might deserve like just a little bit more like just recognition just in the sense, like, because the scheduling for her in Montreal was like really just brutal. So a lot of people could just see, and obviously she did have like the shoulder injury, which probably had aggravated a little bit. I don't know who she lost to in Cincinnati, I forget, but she finished a match at like 3 a.m. There was a lot of like rain delays. Almost, I think she ended up playing two matches in the same day. I don't remember exactly, but it was just like a very lots of up and downs. She did find a lot of ways to like come back to it. So I think maybe because the US Open has like I think three courts there that have retractable roofs, and I don't see her playing anywhere like other than Louis Armstrong and Arthur Ashe. She's probably gonna get to her matches. So with a day of rest, I think is really ideal conditions for her to be able to like find the way to be able to, you know, rest and play her best match like in time, like just to be able to be fit in time for her next matches. And also seven matches, I think, of course, like the caveat being like being in best of three and a five, so she doesn't have that much room for error in each match. Still, seven matches is good enough for enough match practice for when she would meet. She's in the same quarter as Bencic, Sakkari, and Mukova, and I think Mukova is probably the biggest threat in this one. So, but we'll have to see how that one plays out. So, yeah, just like the first few matches are really going to define a lot of what's going to happen in this quarter specifically, I would say.
Yeah, and I'm mostly with you, but remember, was it the Australian Open that had Rybakina out on like court 18 or whatever it was? Like,
true. Yeah.
So, and you know, she's like done a lot more now, like the ranking has come up. But I don't know. I don't know if I would bank on her being on the show courts the entire time, because you know, they might put
Tiafo,
the unseeded Americans. Yeah. Not even Tiafo. Like he'd like deserve it, you know, like unseeded Americans, wild cards, true. You know. So
Tommy Paul. Tommy Paul and Ash.
Well, I mean, Tommy Paul's like coming up, right?
Yeah, he is actually really fun to watch. Like when as I said on Twitter, like his rivalry with Alcaraz has like come out of nowhere, and it's really good. It's like, what? Where did that come from? Yeah, but yeah, nice.
I feel like my perception of him is like unfairly skewed, because I saw him play Djokovic at the Australian Open in the semis, and I was so excited to go to the Australian Open semis, and then he just like could not make any impression whatsoever. So yeah. I feel like my perception of him is kind of unfairly colored by that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's no arguing with
the way the draws are, Djokovic could face Tommy Paul in another semifinal for your pleasure.
No, I don't think anyone would want to see that. But so I was kind of thinking about this recently on the women's side about like who is the favorite, because I think of the five contenders, I feel like Goff and Jabeur could win, but I don't think they're the favorite.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's between the quote unquote big three that we've been talking about. Rybakina, I do think there's been a performance dip since the end of the clay season. Yeah. I don't think that's her fault. I think it's a physical thing.
For sure.
So I have trouble saying her. Swiatek, I think, would lose to Sabalenka or Rybakina, because that's kind of the trend that things have been going recently. But then Sabalenka has been struggling in semifinals recently and kind of hasn't really been able to close out in the big matches since the Australian Open final. So I kind of have trouble betting on any of them. Like, I think they're all kind of vulnerable in their own way, and that makes it really interesting. And so when I've thought about it, I think Sabalenka, I have like a centimeter ahead of the other two, because that power is so explosive. I don't think she's going to lose to like, I don't think she's going to lose early. And I think like the semi like will be tough, just because it seems like those yips have kind of like resurfaced, but I just feel like her game is like more imposing than anyone else's right now. And so if she can do what she did at the Australian Open, which is a big if, then I see her winning.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to go for Świątek on this one. I think for me, I think she's, as you said, like before, she's the most consistent player on tour. Like, I think she has shown a lot of like fighting, like skills that develop drastically from even the beginning of the year. So I do think that she would be able to come through, just like edge people out. I think she's the most experienced in Grand Slams out of the five that you said, like in terms of like winning them. Even though Rybakina and Sabalenka have won, I think I'd still edge Świątek on this one. She's number one. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd give that much of an edge. But I think the way I see it, I think that the best chances of Świątek showing up either as the best player on court or clutching out a match are bigger than Sabalenka showing up as the best player on court. Because I don't see Sabalenka clutching out as much as Świątek would. I think in terms of clutchness, I think I'd still give it to Świątek. But then again, like in terms of like raw power and matchup, like the best version of Sabalenka, I think, beats the best version of Świątek like maybe 6-7 times out of 10 on a hard court I think that's kind of what it is. But of course, like it's tennis is real world, like they're not always at their best, so it depends on like what's going to happen then. So
of course, yeah, and I that's totally fair to have Świątek winning. I guess I just don't see anyone putting Sabalenka on her heels the way that Świątek could be put on her heels, you know. I feel like Sabalenka, if she loses, it's going to be more self-enforced. So I feel like in that way, it's on her racket. Yeah. That's not necessarily like reliable because of, you know, some recent semifinal matches. But I feel like if Świątek kind of plays her best, she could still lose. And I don't think that would happen with Sabalenka. Yeah. But it's really hard to pick. And I will say, like, I think Jabeur, if, you know, she had to, I think she pulled out mid-match in Cincinnati. She finished her match against Sabalenka and it had been really tight, but she was injured by the end. If she's in okay physical condition, I think she could win. Like, the one caveat there is that she wouldn't play Świątek, but I would not be surprised if, like, Świątek loses early and then Jabeur wins the whole thing.
Yeah, that could be a thing too. Just draw based here. I think it's really hard to pull like somebody to go on the semifinals, like when they on the Świątek half. So they'd be like the Świątek, Goff, Kvitova, Kudermetova quarter. I think this one, I would give it, obviously, as I said, like, I think Świątek wins this. So I think Świątek goes into the semis on this one. The one that is, like, a big question mark for me is Rybakina, Mukova, Bencic, Sakkari. I don't believe Bencic and Sakkari are going to make it. So I think it's between Rybakina and Mukova. I think I have a very strong feeling that we're going to see Mukova into another Grand Slam semifinal. I don't know who she's going to face, but, yeah.
And I should have mentioned her as like a legit contender too, because, you know, Roland Garros finalist, Cincinnati finalist, like maybe should have won that Roland Garros final. So yeah, I think that peak level is there and multiple big finals recently. Yeah, I think that puts her off there too. Yeah, it's really interesting. Do you want to make like quick overall picks for winners and then
we'll
close out?
Yeah. Sounds good. I'm going to say Jabeur and Pegula in the semis on the other side. I'm going to pick Jabeur to beat Sabalenka and then Pegula to...
Wow.
And I'll pick Pegula to reach the final. And wow. Yeah, I think Pegula gets to the final. And if she faces Jabeur, if she faces Sabalenka, I think that there's a different story. But
Pegula's never made it past the quarters before at a major.
I know, but I think she's in the best position that she's ever been. I think she's feeling as confident as she's ever been as well, even though Cincinnati wasn't great.
Fair. Well, she won Canada, so.
Yeah, I think she's in a good position. I think she's confident as well. I'm going to pick Pegula to make that deep run. You can hold me accountable on that one. I don't care.
I will.
And Świątek versus Mukova in the other semis, and Świątek to reach the final. And I think it's going to be a straight setter in the final for Świątek on this one.
Really? Pegula is a tough matchup for her, though. Like, that's one of the matchups where, like, I don't have a lot of faith in Świątek.
Yeah, Yeah. But I think in terms of place and just like importance, I don't think
like Pegula in the US.
Is, yeah. Final, I don't think like... it's going to, I don't think Pegula is going to hold like, in terms of like the nerves, like in terms of, I think it's just going to be too big. Yeah. Even though it's straight sets, I don't think 6-1, 6-2, I'm going to guess like a, I don't know, 6-4, 7-6 type of a matchup.
Okay. Okay. Well, okay. So I think it's going to be a Sabalenka-Swiatek final.
Yeah.
And I think Sabalenka wins in epic.
Mm, cool.
Like, well, like a 6-4 in the third kind of match. Like, I think it'll be like a version of what we saw them do last year, but this time Sabalenka, confidence of being a slam champion now, has that little extra. But yeah. I also have no confidence in that prediction.
I actually have more confidence in your prediction than mine, but I'm gonna go with like my gut, and I'm gonna stick to what I said because I don't want to backtrack on this one. Do you want to do a semis on the men's side just real quick, just to finalize it? It's not gonna be as interesting, but whatever.
Yeah, you can do the semis. I'm not gonna bother.
Oh, cool. I'll do. Oh boy, and Rublev defeats Medvedev. No, I'm just kidding. I'm gonna say.
It could happen. I don't know what's going on with Medvedev anymore.
Well, Rublev hasn't been in his best shape either. So I would even like between those two, even right now, I'd still pick Medvedev because it's not like Rublev has gone to his best level. Unfortunately, I kind of really like the guy. So it's
he was
a shame,
pretty good at Wimbledon.
He was, but ever since, kind of not really been the best version of himself. Mm. But yeah, I would say Alcaraz, Medvedev in the semis, straight sets for Alcaraz, maybe four. But yeah, and I think Djokovic, Casper Ruud. I think Djokovic Ruud in the other semis, another straight sets.
That sounds right.
Yeah, like, I think Ruud. I think Ruud beats Rune still, like even in the quarters.
I think so too.
Yeah. And I'm gonna pick between Alcaraz and Djokovic, bro. Who's the winner of that one? I'd say Alcaraz beats Djokovic in the final. Yeah.
Wow.
Another five.
But you said Djokovic was the favorite.
But I'm gonna go against that. I think Alcaraz beats him. Yeah.
I think the same thing. Yeah. I think like, and I don't even really know why I think this. I don't fully trust Djokovic at the U.S. Open, and I think like, even with that Cincinnati win, I kind of think the matchup is more difficult for him at this point. Like, he can peak, and he still has the higher peak. And so he can, like, come out and win the first set, like, 6-3. But I think in, like, a long match, maybe in the heat, like, five sets, and Alcaraz is learning all the time. Like, you can bet that Alcaraz is already... like, he's not gonna have a hangover from Cincinnati, I don't think, mentally. Exactly. I think he's already, like, looking at that match and sort of saying, like, what can I do better? Mm-hmm. So, let's see. I do think we get the Sinner-Alcaraz rematch. I think that's probably, like, an exciting four-setter.
Yeah.
Probably with a few moments where you're like, oh, this could go either way, but Alcaraz wins that. Then we get the final. Is that Alcaraz in five again?
Yeah. Is it Alcaraz in five as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, a rematch of Wimbledon, of course. Bring it on. I think, yeah, as I said, like, and obviously, like, the hashtag the tennis podcast all uses all the time, like, head not heart. For me, it's heart all the way. I think Alcaraz, and not saying that like I'm cheering for Alcaraz, it's just like the gut feeling is like when I close my eyes and I see somebody holding that trophy, I see Alcaraz. So yeah. I think that's what it is. I'm gonna go with my instincts here, which is not saying much, but it is something for me. So,
it's, oh man, can you imagine if we got that? Like, that would be like a Borg-McEnroe situation almost, where like McEnroe comes in and wins like the Wimbledon final and the US Open final. Like, man.
And then Djokovic is retired right after.
I was thinking this before he lost the Wimbledon final, but I was thinking if he won all four this year, he should retire right after that, because you're not like, you know, don't even take the chance that you'll get injured. That then he'd have 25. Like, there's just like no possible better way to end it.
Seriously.
but now it's like I don't know. Something about like the Alcaraz rivalry. It's like, he seems younger in terms of like the hunger now.
Yeah.
because like he wants to figure this guy out, and like oh man, I'm so glad we have this. I think the worst outcome for this tournament is Alcaraz loses to Sinner or someone else, and then Djokovic just sweeps everyone.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a little tragic.
Because yeah, like the as I said, like I feel like the other finals that I could see on the other side would be Sinner or Zverev in the final. Because I feel like if things have to work out a whole lot better for Zverev than it has for Sinner, but Sinner obviously I think he would prefer not to have to face Medvedev because he doesn't have the best track record against. But yeah, I think nothing really is stopping Djokovic from reaching that final, unless, as you said, reasons beyond anyone's understanding. But yeah, I don't think Djokovic is gonna try. Oh, he's not like he's looked for bad luck in the US Open ever, but I think he's gonna be extra careful this year.
I think so too. And like I'm sure that like if this matchup happens, we'll get someone saying like, oh, I think Tsitsipas could beat him or like push him really hard. It's like, no, he probably won't even get that far, but no. Yeah. And like, you know, same with Fritz. Like Fritz has been off. And that their recent match was a little hard to watch. So yeah, it's on that one half, it's Djokovic all the way. And I don't think I think Sinner will like play well against Alcaraz, but I don't think it's going to be enough to win.
Yeah, same here. So yeah, I think the US Open would probably really be happy with the Sabalenka-Świątek final, as you said, even more so than Pegula, I would say, just because even though, as you said, like Pegula has a good record against Świątek in terms of matchup and everything, probably the best outcome would be a Pegula-Goff final for America. But
that'd be very cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm sticking to my Pegula prediction into the finals, and I think Alcaraz Djokovic is just gonna blow it out of the water on Sunday. So
that'd be great. I mean, if we got Alcaraz Djokovic and Sabalenka Świątek, then we'd have the two best players in the world on both tours.
Yeah.
Oh man, that would be fantastic. I would love that.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, it's exciting times coming in.
Yeah.
Are you planning on writing anything during the US Open?
I'd like to. It depends if I have the time and the
patience. Not to put you on the spot, but yeah.
No, it's totally fine. If we get like an epic match that like I have to write about, then you know I will do that. Like the Wimbledon final. Like I saw that and I was like, okay, I need to write something, and I hadn't necessarily been planning it. But so if something like that happens, I will write. Hopefully I can do a couple things at least.
Yeah. So yeah, you can follow us. Thanks for listening, first of all, and you can follow us on our social media. Twitter is the one that we use the most, mostly because of time, but also been a little dead because of time as well, but it's a good time to revive it at the last Grand Slam of the year. We're gonna get back more podcasts as well once Vansh finishes with his contract the US Open. We are obviously going to start recording more episodes. We'll see if he's going to be able to do a Flink one, but we'll keep you updated. And feel free to reach out to us. You can also find Owen at Tennis Nation on Twitter, myself at Rolandberg Andre, and Vansh at VanshV2K. And yeah, we'll see you there and enjoy the US Open. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.